Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards Incorporated owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, and in the U.S. Although John Yetman and Josh Schneider have compensated the Eric Stewart Show and WMAL to be featured on this show, this is not a solicitation nor intended to provide individually tailored investment advice. The strategies and or investments referenced may not be suitable for all investors. Morgan Stanley, Smith Barney LLC, Morgan Stanley, its affiliates, and Morgan Stanley Financial Advisors do not provide tax or legal advice. The views expressed herein are those of the presenter and may not necessarily reflect the views of Morgan Stanley Smith Barney LLC, member SIPC.
Now, back to the Eric Stewart Show on WMAL.
Welcome back. You know, there are so many financial terms out there that we read about and see all the time, and it just honestly tends to be a little confusing. Today, I've got John Yetman, who is a Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor, and Senior Portfolio Manager with Morgan Stanley in Bethesda, Maryland. And to help us discuss this topic, John, can you tell us, please, exactly, because, I mean, I think we hear financial planning all the time on the radio, but what really is wealth planning?
Right. So wealth planning is really the full integration. It's a holistic way of looking at lifestyle planning. Where are you going to get the money to achieve your goals and objectives? Asset protection. How do you protect your assets? As well as wealth transfer and estate planning issues. So is the money getting to the people that you want it to? And is it getting there in a tax efficient manner?
Right.
The more assets we have, both in value, total value, and the types of assets we own, whether it's real estate, stocks and bonds, cash and banks and so forth, as well as how they're titled, the more complex this task becomes and the more blind spots it can be hiding from us that really need to be addressed.
Now, I think most people don't like to tackle jobs that are very complex unless they do them all the time. So blind spots, well, that just really sounds concerning.
Right. So there's all kinds of blind spots. An example might be how assets are titled. So are they titled in the name of the husband and wife or in various trusts and so forth? And at the end of the day, which really is the end of the day for people when those assets get transferred, you don't want that to come into the court and probate and things like that. So you want to handle it ahead of time.
Right. I think in real estate, a good example would be tenants by the entirety in the sale of a piece of real estate, because when someone buys, they typically buy spouse, husband and wife together. Occasionally, people will buy as separate entities, but if one party passes and it's not tenants by the entirety, then you do have to go through a transfer process after the fact.
Right. So what this really boils down to is that you need an approach, a process to make this simple, right? So First of all, wealth planning is an ongoing process. It's extremely important. You want to identify these blind spots. And it's not so apparent when you just go and have a review, quote unquote, done by your financial advisor. You really need a financial plan done. And once these blind spots are revealed, it helps us educate our clients as to what they can be facing, and it helps us help them plan for the goals they prioritize. Most clients really don't even realize that they need to plan for this until we went through the process. And here, knowledge is definitely power.
Now, it seems that this approach has worked very well for your clients in the past. Tell us a little bit more.
Right, absolutely. So besides both the initial and the ongoing process of understanding clients' concerns and goals and helping them plan more effectively, we call this the discovery meeting. Normally, we'll spend an hour and a half with clients determining what they're trying to accomplish, looking at their assets, liabilities, expenses, and revenues, and looking at cash flows and so forth, making sure all these align. We have principles that we adhere to that make this process more manageable and keep things in perspective.
What are these principles?
The seven are: principle number one, the longer you wait, the fewer options you have.
Hold on, let me stop you there, because essentially, the longer you go down the road in life, the less option you have to change your plan. And if you start earlier with a wealth plan, if you're 30 versus 50 versus 70, the more options you have for growing that over time. Yes?
Absolutely. It's not just growing it. It's also gifting. There's many aspects of a financial plan that where you lose your options the longer you wait.
One of the things I love about the audience that listens to the show, most of the people are very, very good planners. When I meet with them, they've got their estate plan in effect. They've got a very good wealth plan in effect. However, I do think that there are plenty of people who don't make the plan. And historically, I think what we hear on the television is that something like 90% of Americans have no plan for how they're going to retire. They just figure it's going to work out somehow. Maybe someone's going to give them money. They don't really know. Whereas you're now offering an opportunity for our listeners to meet one-on-one and come up with a plan to know where they are and where they can get to when they need to retire eventually.
Right. And Eric, even for those people that do have plans, I would say it's never a bad thing to have a second opinion. Right.
Good point.
If you were to have a major surgery, you might have a second opinion. I would just take the position that your financial future and that of your spouse and your children are important enough to spend a couple hours and just making sure you're on track.
Absolutely. I like the fact that you guys you kind of approach it the same way I do. I encourage our listeners to meet with a couple different realtors before they hire one. I just ask that I'm one of the two. I think the approach is nothing to fear here. If you've got an idea of something you like your wealth manager, but you just want to get a second opinion, you got somebody here who will do it, no obligation. John, how could they reach you?
Right. So the best thing to do is call our office. My assistant's name is Rachel Weiner. Rachel's number is 301-961-2095.
Let's say that a number again for our listeners.
Just sure. 301-961-2095.
And it's best to call, and speak to Rachel, and John will give you a call back. Again, that's
301-961-2095.
John, thanks for being on the show.
You got it, Eric.
Next week, we're going to dig deeper into planning now. Because the longer you wait, the fewer options you have. And back with us next week will be John Yetman and
Jason Martin
from Morgan Stanley. Have a wonderful day, and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Eric.
Speaking of money, I don't know if you have heard the hubbub about the Affordable Care Act, or what's called Obamacare. If you're filing your taxes, starting with this year's filing season, taxpayers must report certain information related to your health care coverage, okay? So on your 2014 tax return, when you file for April, you must provide proof of health insurance coverage or that you've received an exemption, okay? So with that in mind, let's take a look at how the Affordable Care Act might affect your tax situation and based on your type of coverage, which new tax forms you might be receiving. So, and here's a tip. So, for additional information about IRS tax forms related to health care, you definitely want to get information from a tax professional. The overview here is the biggest change for most taxpayers is found on line 61 of Form 1040, where individuals must either check a box to show that they had health insurance or pay a penalty. In general, the penalty applies to individuals who did not have health insurance for more than 3 months of last year. And guess what that penalty is? It's the greater of 1% of modified adjusted gross income, or $95 per adult, whichever is greater, or $47.50 per child under the age of 18, up to a maximum of $285 per family. This is a tax, folks. It's the government's taxing families, basically saying if you don't get health insurance, you're going to give us tax money to pay for the benefits of other people because we're your government and we're here to tell you how to live your life. I don't like it. I don't think it's the government's job to tax us if we don't buy health insurance. It's our decision to decide whether or not we want to buy the insurance or self-insure for ourselves. Yes? Agreed. All right. I sell real estate for a living, but I sure don't like big government, and I sure don't like what I don't like is so many people who don't understand this penalty and are about to get their lives really messed up. Wait till you see the fallout over the next 4 to 5 months of taxation problems that have happened for a lot of these lower income families because they didn't get the insurance in the right amount of time. They didn't understand things. It's just turned into a big, big mess. And speaking of messes, there's something sad in Brian Williams' need to puff up his Iraq adventures. And Dave Brooks, who did he's an op-ed columnist in the New York Times, rather. You know, I like what he says here. The sad part is the reminder that no matter how high you go in life and no matter how many accolades you win, it's just never enough. The desire for even more admiration races ahead. If I could do this, then more people would recognize me this way. You know, career success really never satisfies. Public love always leaves you hungry. Even very famous people can do self-destructive things in an attempt to seem just a little cooler. The barbaric part is the way that you and I respond to scandal these days. When somebody violates a public trust, we try to purge and ostracize them. A sort of Colosseum culture takes over, leaving no place for mercy. And by now, the script is familiar. Some famous person does something wrong. The internet, the most impersonal of mediums, erupts with contempt and mockery. The offender issues a paltry half-apology. You know, we've seen this many times, which only inflames the public more. The pounding cry for resignation builds until capitulation comes. Public passion is spent, and the spotlight moves on. You know, Martin Luther King Jr. argued that forgiveness isn't an act. It's an attitude. We're all sinners, folks. We expect sin. We empathize with sin and are slow to think ourselves superior. We need to be forgiving of people. We need to not judge people. Let's be careful that we are not throwers of rocks when we are guilty too. I'll be right back.